for those of us that came of age during that time, it's hard to overemphasize that it wasn't just another tragic historical event, but literally the event that changed our lives forever. It was almost like hitting a reset button, reminding us all how globalized and vulnerable we are, how none of us exist in a vacuum, that our place in the world as individuals is also defined by things that happen to people we may know nothing about. That day also changed how Americans looked at each other, and for many, created a sense of national identity and patriotism that was stronger than ever before.
Welcome to Velocity of Content. I'm Christopher Keneally with CCC. Hosted by Shah Jahan, the King of the World podcast recounts his journey through addiction, identity, creativity, and what it means to belong as a Muslim in America in the 20 years after 9/11. An actor and musician, Shah Jahan explores with sound and voices the challenges that can be part of the American Muslim experience. In December, King of the World won the 2021 Golden Crane Award for Best Production from the Asian American Podcasters Association. King of the World is produced by Raphaelian Media, based in Portland, Oregon. Asad Butt is founder and producer with Raphaelian. Welcome to the program, Asad Butt. Assalamu alaikum.
Welcome, Salam. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're really happy you can join us, and congratulations again on the Golden Crane Award. King of the World is the first podcast series from Raphaelian, so you are off to a terrific start. And I guess the question to ask you is about what kinds of stories and whose voices are you hoping to share?
Yeah, sure. So Raphaelian Media was founded 2 years ago to really elevate diverse voices. And for us, that means people and stories that aren't really being told in mainstream media. And for us, we're starting with stories from the American Muslim community, because that's where, you know, my background is, and that's where Shah Jahan's background is as well. And those stories we find are just aren't out there. When I was growing up in Boston, just outside of Boston, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, there were few, if any, American Muslims on TV, radio, or in movies. And if they were, they tended to be very negative portrayals, terrorist villains, swarthy characters. And so what we're trying to do at Raphaelian is to provide more content, more diverse content. We're first starting with the American Muslim community, and then from there we'll expand to other groups, marginalized groups, or groups that whose stories aren't being told in many ways.
Right. And so you and Shah Jahan have much in common. As you mentioned, you grew up, as he did, in predominantly white suburban Boston, an area both of us know pretty well. And yeah. So I have to ask you about how much of your own Muslim American story is a part of what you're doing at Raphaelian.
Yeah. I mean, so much of it is a part of it. And I think, you know, for me, like you mentioned, I grew up in a very, very white, very Christian suburb of Boston. There were a couple other Muslim families that were you know, in my town. And I had one other Muslim student in my grade, or two actually, in my grade of 100. And so, you know, there's some solidarity there, but it was still very much the I was definitely an outsider, you know, and when I went to college up in Maine, I was also an outsider. You know, I was at a small liberal arts school up in Maine. And I think so much of the my experience just isn't being told in media. And that story is, you know, someone who grew up in a predominantly, you know, white liberal world, and who's, you know, the trials and tribulations that I've had to go through work, through relationships, through just in the business world, the challenges that we faced. And so, you know, Raphaelian is definitely, you know, what we're trying to do, share stories like myself, like Shah Jahan, and like others that have had the similar experience that we've had.
Well, so you've reflected on it a lot. What role do you think media plays in shaping attitudes toward Muslim Americans? Is it a predominantly negative force, do you think?
Yeah, you know, I would say it's negative and probably inaccurate. You know, I think that there have been studies that have been done both here in the UK that show, you know, mass media on a regular basis negatively portrays Muslims and Muslim stories. And that could be through headlines, that could be through the content that is written, that can be, you know, stories. And this has a huge impact on people's day-to-day lives, policy, you know, culture, you name it. It is getting better. The last 20 years, we've seen a little bit of an improvement as, you know, access to media and the ability to self-publish and get out there has been easier. But it's definitely been a challenging road for a lot of American Muslims and getting our stories out there.
Right. And you've been on that road for a while. In 2004, you helped launch Bridges TV, which was the first American Muslim lifestyle network. You were its first news director, producer, and anchor. And you briefly mentioned it, but I want to ask you about the way you feel the media environment for Muslim Americans has evolved over the past two decades. There's some improvement, and perhaps there's also some backsliding going on.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I mean, I think that, you know, in the early 2000s, a lot of the media that was coming out that had to do with American Muslims was this kind of black and white, good or bad type of thing. And so you had stories and portrayals of Muslims that were either those kind of negative terrorists, and that was kind of the predominant thing, or the good guy that was challenging the terrorist or the terrorist trope. And I think what we've seen over the last, you know, 20 years, especially in the last five, is more nuanced stories and stories of people that are just regular people that have challenges like any other person of any other faith. And that's really exciting to see, because I think that that helps showcase to people that Muslims are just like any other American. They're just like any other person. You know, they go through, you know, different challenges on a day-to-day basis, just like you do, just like anybody else. I think one other big thing over the last 15 years since when Bridges TV launched was that, I mentioned this before, just the access to be able to create your own content and put it out there is a lot easier. Bridges TV launched in 2004, which was pre-YouTube. It's hard to imagine a time when YouTube didn't exist, you know. But, you know, we were trying to – the way that we were trying to reach our audience was through cable television. And so, you know, Muslims who wanted to get this content had to not only have cable, but then, you know, pay another $10 for this channel. And then they were able to, you know, to get our content. And I would just say that it was a business model that was doomed from the start. I think, you know, you're seeing more and more people come up with this type of business model now, which works because you have things like podcasts, you have things like YouTube, you can create a website a lot easier and put content up on there. And so, yeah, I think the environment has changed just, you know, in terms of the ability to access this kind of content and the diversity of content that's out there.
Well, and it's not just the content. It occurs to me, I said, but listening to you, that it's more than the stories. It's also the voices. So we have prominent Muslims who are delivering the news. I'm thinking, for example, of Asma Khalid with National Public Radio. She's the first person that comes to mind. There are many others. And that makes a difference as well.
And so, yeah, certainly Muslims, as the Gen X Muslims, have come of age. We've diversified into the types of careers that we've gone into. You know, we're not just, you know, the kind of stereotype is that Muslims and will become doctors, lawyers, or, you know, engineers or whatnot. And we've, you know, we 20 years ago, we went into this, you know, into journalism, we went into movies, we went into you name it. And now a lot of us are coming to the top of our careers. And as you mentioned, Asma Khalid is a great example. There are just dozens of other people, you know, even our comedians, Hasan Minhaj, you know, journalist/comedian, you know, he's at the top of his game.
Well, and you're paving the way at Raffelli. And so give us the pitch. Why should we listen to King of the World? What are we going to get from it?
No, that's a great question. I think that, you know, there's a couple different audiences for King of the World. I think the first is certainly other American Muslims who came of age in a post 9/11 world. And so I think for other American Muslims who listen to this podcast, you'll feel a sense of solidarity with other Muslims who, you know, and realize just, I don't know if I can swear, but all the crazy stuff that we have gone through over the last 20 years. And, you know, it's a celebration of, you know, the fact that we survived all this stuff, and we are not only have we survived, but we're still thriving. I think the second audience I like to imagine in my head is my wife, who is, you know, a white American, you know, atheist essentially, who has, you know, married into a Muslim family, and, you know, her family has accepted me and loves me as well. But maybe they want to understand a little bit more about our journey as American Muslims over the last 20 years. And I think this story will enlighten them about the trials and tribulations and the highs and lows about being an American Muslim in the last 20 years and all the, you know, what it was like to go through, what it was like to have our identities challenged, what it was like to go through when Trump was elected, the fact that the government had been and is spying on Muslims on a regular basis. I think the kind of third audience is just one that really likes a good story. You know, I think that Shah Jahan's story, his personal journey of coming of age in a post 9/11 world, and then kind of the highs and lows that he's had to go through personally. You know, he attempted suicide once. He started an internationally renowned punk band. He struggled with his identity, with addiction, you name it. I think anybody who likes a good story will really, you know, love to go along this journey. I wonder, what did you find appealing about it?
Well, fair enough. I think, first of all, it's really beautifully produced. So it is, it's engrossing in that way as an oral and aural experience. And so that's I think, the first thing you need with any kind of quality podcast. But it was also hearing about a character and experience that just was at odds with everything I thought I knew about Muslim Americans. I mean, Muslim American punk band. Let's just start with that.
Sure. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, and time again, I think Shah Jahan's personal story, like, the, you know, people are trying to pin him down into a certain thing, whether it's people in the Muslim community or people in the, the white suburban, a community that he grew up in. Like, they're all trying to say, Shah Jahan, because you are Pakistani American Muslim, you are this. And time again, he's challenging that. And then, you know, there's a struggle because of that, you know? And so, yeah, thank you for saying that.
And it's also a story about family. I thought that was really important as well.
Yeah. You know, I did not know this going in. I mean, I've known Shah Jahan's family for forever, for my entire life, but they are in just some of the best storytellers, and it's amazing the honesty and the humility and the humor that they bring to this podcast. And it really, I think without them, the story wouldn't have gone as far as it did. You know, I think you hear in the first episode, Shah Jahan, you know, going to his mother and saying, you know, how do I wipe this brown skin off of my hands? And Shah Jahan's mom doesn't miss a beat and says, you know, they haven't invented soap like that yet, you know? Her family and, even Shah Jahan's friends who shared their experiences, about him growing up, I think it was really enlightening and helpful to making the podcast so impactful.
Right. And so for non-Muslims in the audience, any tips for helping us be more critical consumers of media when it comes to covering Muslim Americans?
Yeah, no, I think Muslims, non-Muslims alike, you know, I think that it has gotten better, a coverage of Muslims and whatnot. I think that, you know, if you're reading something in the newspaper about Muslims, you know, just understanding who are the voices that they've asked, who are the experts that they're asking to comment on it. A lot of times you'll hear, you know, you'll read stories about Afghanistan or Palestine, but you'll hear experts that aren't from that region espousing, you know, their thoughts on it. And so, you know, I would say seek out content that is created by people from the regions that you're interested in, and know that even that perspective is just a unique perspective, and that there are countless other, you know, stories from that perspective. I think that, you know, I don't think I mentioned this to you, but we are actually creating a database that should go live later this month of all the content that is being created by American Muslims, podcasts, movies, TV shows, and when they're being released. So, you know, if you have an interest in what American Muslims are producing, you can go to this and find content that will appeal to you.
And how should Muslim Americans respond, do you think, Asad Butt, when confronted by misrepresentations and prejudice?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really great question. I think one way is to really call it out and call out why they think that misrepresentation is negative or untrue. And I think you see a lot of that happening on Twitter, on Instagram, on a little bit of it on LinkedIn. But I think that's really powerful for people's friends and people's colleagues to see, okay, wow, this portrayal of a Muslim in Wonder Woman is so negative. Why is that? You know, and even though that image was only on there for, you know, 20 seconds, I think, you know, seeking out or for Muslims, I think also just sharing with their non-Muslim friends these kind of opinions is important as well. You know, I think that it's a constant battle that we have to go through. I think there are other things that, you know, Muslims can do, and that is support the good content that's out there and promote that good content and why that's also good content as well.
Asad Butt with Raphaelian Media, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Chris. That was great.
Our producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burris Marketing. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for joining me on Velocity of Content from CCC.